Hello and welcome to another episode of Galactic Chat. I'm David McDonald and today I get to interview Jeremy Zahl. He's a Sydney-based writer and editor who's had over 20 publications in various fiction magazines, anthologies, journals and websites. In June 2014, he received an honourable mention from Writers of the Future and he's also been nominated for the Parsec Award. As well as his writing, he's also an assistant editor for the Hugo Award-winning podcast Starship Sofa, where he's worked with Hugo Award winners and best-selling authors such as Peter Watts, Robin Hobb, Ian Watson, Tobias Buckle, and more. So welcome to Galactic Chat.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure. So just for our listeners, if you could just, I've given a little bit of an introduction, but if you wanted to tell us just a little bit about yourself, and maybe tell us how you got into this whole writing and editing game.
As you said, yeah, I am Sydney-based and I've had over 20 publications. I'm 19 as well, so yeah, it's just something that I've been wanting to do for a while, writing, but obviously I couldn't. I was a bit too young. But I got into writing because my mum, she'd be the one who essentially got me into reading. And I love stories. Every day I would consume some sort of story. And so after a while, I wanted to write my own. So I started doing that. I wrote a book in the summer. It didn't go so well. I spent a year editing it and I hated it. Then I just wrote another one. And then after a while, I quit for a few years. Then after a while, I got back into it after school, when I finished school. But then I started to notice that my stuff was actually improving. I was actually proud of it. And so then I wrote a novel. And that didn't work out, but I knew I was close. I knew I wanted to work in science fiction and fantasy. So I then started doing short stories. And, yeah, that's how I am here today.
So you talked about starting very young, which is making me feel like a real late bloomer. So you published your first story at 18. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the advantages you think such an early start brings, or are there any disadvantages?
I wouldn't say there are any disadvantages at all. I mean, yeah, it's just... earlier start is possible because the world doesn't wait for you and we don't have long on this earth. And so, yeah, start as soon as you can, because I hear so many people just like, oh yeah, they're 50 years old and they're just like, oh yeah, I'd love to write. I just don't have the time. I'll write when I've finished retirement. I'll write when this, yada, yada. Yeah, honestly, you should start as soon as you possibly can. Like, you shouldn't wait around. There's always a spare moment. There's on the bus, when you're going in the park, when you're just sweating around, when you're watching TV, like, actually it's simple. Like, just don't watch TV for one evening. Go sit down at your desk and cut yourself open and bleed over the keyboard and see what you can come up with. It's simple. And I think that people should start as soon as possible. I mean, I think, what's his name? Greg Bear, yeah, he sold his first short story when he was 15. Only 15, that's humongous. And look where he is today. He's got over, like, 60 books. I'm not saying I'll get that. I'd like to, but... yeah, it's just the sooner the better. And if anyone is listening out there that wants to write, I'd implore you to start as soon as possible. You never know what you can come up with.
So as well as fitting in all that writing already, you're also the assistant editor at Starship Sofa. Mm-hmm. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about Starship Sofa? What's its mission and what is it there to sort of promote and achieve?
It's a fanzine. It's this fan podcast. It's about all things science fiction. So as well as, like, we're not actually a journal as such. We're more as in a podcast, regular podcast by science fiction writers, by science fiction readers, for science fiction readers and listeners. And it's just pretty much every episode we have a few stories. We have we discuss like science news, movie reviews, and that sort of thing. But foremost, our goal is to really expand the world of science fiction, to just like get really juicy stories out there, to inspire, to create, to just get them into the hands of listeners, because audio and text are very different things, and not everyone has the patience to sit down at a computer and just read the latest issue of Clark's World. But a lot of people just are able to download an episode to their iPhone and just pop it in on the way to work and just listen to it that way. So our goal is to expand it, just get people's fiction into more people's hands. And one thing I especially like doing is getting stories that a lot of people have forgotten about and all aren't available anymore, and just bringing them open to the public. I think recently our latest episode, Old Paint, from Megan Lindholm, also known as Robin Hobb, that story was published in Asimov's in 2012, And yeah, like, because Asimov's, unless you have a physical copy, Asimov's doesn't store the, doesn't archive their work, I think. You have to buy it. And so essentially that work, it's essentially lost. And now that we've brought it up to the open, anyone who just, you can just hit play and just listen to the story. It's just, and it's also just, yeah, giving the writers a bit of attention and, allowing people to just have, observe new work that they might not have had the chance to do before.
So what does your role involve? What's a day at work for you at Starship Sofa?
Day at work. Essentially, my job is to contact authors. Foremost is to find the stories, obviously. I find the ones I like. I find the ones that I think are worthwhile. I can't take everything, and even if I could, I wouldn't, because, quite frankly, there's a lot of stuff out there that I don't like. But I also take stuff that I think it's new, that's fresh, that's original, it takes risks, etc. So I find those. I do a lot of reading, I have to. I contact the author, and I try and get permission from them. Some authors allow it, some don't. I've had quite a few authors tell me that they will not allow me to use their work, which is fair enough. They're not getting paid for it, so it's understandable. But there are other authors that do allow it, so I contact them, I get written permission for them to use it, and then I do some research on narrators, because I read the stories, obviously, but I also have to get in touch with narrators and figure out which is the best narrator for the story, because obviously there are a lot of different narrators, and some more suited to stories than others. Some stories require a guy to do it, maybe a guy with an American accent, while other stories require a woman's touch. It varies very, and I need to be able to, because as an editor, it's my job to make sure that the writers get the best stuff they can get output they can while giving me their work. So I try to find the best narrator possible. So when I do that, the narrators do their job. They get back to me. I listen to it, and if it's good enough, I basically prop it up on the show. I paste in the bio, in the credentials. And so, yeah, that's basically what it is. There's a lot of organizing, there's a lot of sorting, there's a lot of file folding. I think, like, I've got a Dropbox folder. I think I've got 50 folders on there filled with bios and author pages and links and stories, etc. And you can imagine how that all go to hell if it all got messed up. So tight organization is required.
So how did you get involved in the first place with Starship Sofa?
I actually don't know. I think one of my friends, he's a writer, he actually liked the post because the assistant editor had left, and the other guy had my Tony, the editor-in-chief and producer, he had no assistant editor. So he posted, I think, on Facebook about how he needed someone, and one of my friends must have liked it because it popped up in my feed. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll look at this. And so I looked them up. I was really impressed, and I sent an email off to Tony asking, pretty much bribing him if I could get on the show. It involved extortion, bribery, what have you. But yeah, essentially, good, and my charms, of course. But yeah, I got the position, and he basically talked me through it, and I actually couldn't believe that I'd actually done it. That I couldn't actually, it didn't occur to me that I'd actually be able to go to writers that I've been reading since I was 12 years old, go to them, like they're three times my age, and say to them, hey, I like your story, can I please serve as your editor, can we please use your work? And to work with them on that, it's just humongous, it's a humongous honor, it's a great privilege, so I'm really proud to be doing that.
Living the dream.
You could say so, yeah.
So, after working in both mediums, like doing your own writing and also working on the Starship Sofa, what do you think that audio versions, you know, podcast fiction, what do you think it brings to the table that other mediums don't?
You mean is in how does it? Yeah, how does it? What do you mean by that? Like how it?
Does it create a different experience for the consumer? Does it make stories have a different impact?
Oh yeah, definitely. It also depends on the narrator, of course, because like I'm a fast reader. I don't listen to audio, which is strange because I work in it. But yeah, I don't listen to audio because I don't have the patience for it to just listen to someone else read it out for me. But other people do. And it all depends on the tone. It all depends on the pacing. It all depends on the person narrating it. And some person might be really good with fantastic prose, poetic flowing prose. Other people might be really good with the guttural, visceral work of someone like Joe Abercrombie or Mark Lawrence. So others might be able to do work with someone like Elizabeth Baer or Brandon Sanderson. It all depends on it also depends on the work, but it also depends on the narrator and how they're able to get that story across. And that you can get one story with two different narrators and you can have a completely different experience with them. Of course, it depends on the listener as well, but it also depends on the way the narrator handles the story, how they tackle it, etc. Because some stories just don't work well, just don't compute with some narrators. It's just incompatible. And so, yeah, it does depend largely on the narrator. And I think that, yeah, podcasts do deliver a very different experience from stories, because if you're reading it, it's your voice essentially who's picking up the part. It's your envision of the world. But if this is the person who's reading it out, the person's accent might be articulated differently. The landscape might be described differently. Someone's voice out of breath might sound different. If someone might have a deeper voice or a lighter voice. There's endless possibilities. And while it does provide a different experience, I won't necessarily say it's a better one. Reading is a very personal experience, and if someone else does it for you, it varies. But yeah, it does definitely create a different kind of story. Yeah.
So, as the person who's doing a fair bit of the acquiring of stories, what are the things that you look for in a story and go, yeah, this would make a great audio version?
I look for something. That's a great question, because I look for something primarily that takes risks. Someone who's prepared to do something dangerous, to go out of the ordinary, and to really push the envelope, because there's a lot of stories out there that play it very safe. They don't experiment with different kinds of voices. They don't try new things. They don't follow their own pattern. I'm not saying use phonetics or have some sort of like experimental prose, but I am saying to not let your imagination go wild, because a lot of stories out there, I wouldn't say they classify science fiction. A lot of them are more leaning towards magic realism. And I'm really looking for a story that goes, just expands and just has no limits. I'm looking for authors who don't allow political correctness to hamper their work. I'm looking for authors who are not afraid to take risks. I'm looking for writers who can and will maim and harm their characters. Like, I've read Karen Miller's recent The Falcon Throne. Like, it's a taboo in almost everything. Don't harm kids. But if you've read that, like, I listened to your recording of it, she absolutely ignores that rule. And other people like Mark Lawrence's Prince of Thorns, how he his main narrator is an absolute psychopath. He's a rapist. He's an absolute maniac. But he still manages to, not only does he manage for us to connect with him, he also manages his protagonist to be, his work to be flowing and prose and poetic and have gracious prose. And I'm looking for writers who can do that, who aren't afraid to write from an alien protagonist, for example, that has a truly warped perspective of the human race. I actually remember I read a story like that a while ago, and the sort of things that this alien was saying, it was just completely outrageous. And of course people were offended. There were some who were offended. There's always going to be people who can't tell the difference between satire and documentary, and who believe that in fiction the protagonist's morals or viewpoint must reflect that of the author. But people who are able to step out of that zone and to be absolutely fearless and says, yes, I want my characters to go through complete hell. Yes, I want to be able to write a really twisted world. Yes, I want my character to do horrible things. That's the sort of stuff that I'm looking for. People who are able to, not follow the road and just write what they want to write, just completely fearless. That's the sort of stuff I'm interested in.
So are there any structural limitations in terms of length of stories, the point of view of the story that affect whether it's suitable to be adapted?
Yes, don't do second person, ever. ever. I'm not even joking. I despise second person, and this might be a bias, but I despise it. It just doesn't work. Okay, so I'm just putting a message out there. Unless you're Ian Banks, don't do second person. If you're Ian Banks, he's dead, but if you are... if he's somewhere out there is a ghost, you're welcome to send me a story. But if you're not, don't do second person. It just doesn't work. With length, yes, there is a problem with length. I prefer to be the 6,000 words is really a sweet spot. 10,000's great, but anything pushing that can be a little bit, I don't know, it just takes up a lot of time, and it's hard for the narrator as well to keep that up. I think the longest story we will have at the moment is I think it might be Neighbours by Megan Lindholm. It was in the anthology Dangerous Women, edited by George R. R. Martin. And I think that clocks, that was 15,000 words. And that's already pushing it, but because it's Robin Hobb or Megan, I took it on. But any, but if it was someone else who just had said, yeah, I've got this, I might say no. I mean, it's not a short story. That's a novelette. It's, and it can be far too long. And it's hard for listeners to appreciate something and for have the time, because a lot of people won't sit down and just listen to an audio recording for 2 hours. They might sit down and read a book for 2 hours, but they might not listen to the same podcast for 2 hours. So people who are able to condense their work, not always by length, but just have brevity, like have a really tight focus, just make every word count. That's the sort of stuff that works the best, where every word has weight, every word has meaning, and no space is wasted on unnecessary fat and fluff.
So a lot of the rules of normal storytelling are just as applicable.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, definitely. Like they're not that different. It's just someone reading it out. And if I'm, no one wants to read five pages of fluffy prose and exposition. But how would you mind listening to someone narrate for like 15 minutes of just like ham-fisted exposition and just this flowy, exquisite prose that doesn't go anywhere? You get bored. You'd fast forward it, or even turn it off. It's the same, like with some books, if there's all this unnecessary fluff, you're just reading, you're just like, what the hell am I reading? You want to get it through. You want the meat of the story. You want the solid protein. You don't want all the unnecessary potatoes on the side. And it's the same with audio fiction, for sure, and something that I'd like to definitely make sure doesn't happen too much, because there are other ways of having a large world and having a backdrop. You can weave it in, weave exposition in, but I don't want it to be the first 10 minutes of the story just setting up the scene. No one's going to be sitting through that.
So I assume it varies a little bit, but say a 6,000-word story, what does that translate to in terms of time?
I'm not sure. I think it's 45 minutes. I can't be sure. It all depends on the narrators. My mother, she's narrated Megan Lindholm's story, Old Paint. It's up this week. And I think that was just over an hour. That story was 10,000 words, and that was just over an hour. But I can't be sure. It all depends on the narrators. If every minute someone takes 10 extra seconds, then it 10 extra seconds per minute to narrate a story, 10 seconds less. It piles up. You've got half an hour on there. You can have a huge chunk of it either added or subtracted. It varies, but I'd say 6,000 words is essentially 30 minutes, 40. I can't be sure. It's impossible to know. It all depends on the narrator.
So I know this puts you in a bit of an unfair position. You probably don't want to upset anyone, but do you have any particular favourite stories that you've acquired that you've seen make the transition to the podcast?
There's quite a few, actually. Megan Lindholm's Old Paint, that was fantastic. We've got one next week, I think. It was called Derek Kungsen, Schools of Clay, and this is one of those risk takers. It's one of the stories that it's really hard science fiction, and it's about like a group of aliens in biological science, where these aliens are like mining rocks, and they consume rocks, all these different types of minerals and chemicals, etc. And their bodies are made of forms of rocks and carapaces. And it was so out there, so utterly alien, and it's just something that I had to take. A lot of writers won't do that because they say that having an alien protagonist is something that won't work. Readers won't want to. No one wants to read it. No one can connect to it. But I loved it. He sent it to me. I got another one of his stories for that was published in Analog, and he sent me this. I gave a read of it, and I was just absolutely blown away. I'd never seen anything like this. Like, it was completely different. So I'm really looking forward to that. What else have we got? Yeah, one by a story by Anna North called Lullaby. It was in John Joseph Adams' Robot Uprising's anthology. That's a fantastic story, and I can't wait for that to come on. We've got a few stories by Kat Rambo coming up. We've got one by Alan Steele. It's really marvelous work. We've got, I think, a Neil Asher story. I think it was one of the... It's actually the story that got me into reading short stories. It was called Softly Spoke the Gabble Duck. It was published in Asimov's in 2005, and I don't remember where I read it. I think I might have bought his book collection, but I loved it so much. And that's actually the story that got me reading and writing short stories. And I'm actually in contact with Pam McMillan at the moment, trying to get the rights to use the story. So that's really thrilling. So yeah, there's been quite a few favorites, and I'm just really, really happy to be having that stuff on the show.
Well, you certainly, in terms of both authors and some of the markets you're talking about sourcing stories from, certainly looking at the cream of the crop there.
Yeah, we definitely have to, because there are treasure troves of fiction. Like as Ken Liu said on his podcast, and we spoke about, we do need more authors, we do need more editors, we need more magazines, and there's a treasure trove of stories out there, and it's from every corner of the globe, and we need more of them. And unfortunately, there's a lot of stuff that isn't as great, but there are also fantastic nuggets hidden in the rocks. And there are some venues that, while they're not exactly pro-rates, there's still some fantastic stuff, like Fantasy Scroll Mag, that's a marvelous magazine. Grimdark Magazine as well, that's just come out. I know the guy who's in charge of it, the editor, and he's got some marvelous stories. Like, he's able to purchase stories by, like, R. Scott Bakker and Joe Abercrombie and Mark Lawrence. It's fantastic work there. There's, I think, Everyday Fiction as well. It was actually where I sold one of my first stories, and they publish a story every day, and it is some fantastic work on there, and it's just under 1,000 words, and I think I've gotten 6 stories from there. So yeah, there are treasure troves and hidden gems everywhere in the market. You just need to be able to find it, because it's all hidden under the rubble of self-published work and just all this other crap. And so we really need to be able to find the greatest of the great, and some of the stuff, the fact that people come to us about it, it's just, yeah, really gratifying to see that people do that.
Well, you've referenced the interview we did with Ken Liu recently, and we were talking during that podcast about how many new markets are coming out as a result of the internet in terms of Lightspeed and places like that. And you've referenced some other ones. So it's also exciting to see, you know, that there's opportunities for people to have their stories released in audio form through what you guys are doing. So how long has Starship Sofa been running for?
I think since 2006, actually. Like, we've had nearly 400 episodes, one a week. And yeah, I think it's been going for, I know the math doesn't add up, but yeah, it's been going on for a very long time. And we've had a lot of authors on there. We've had Michael Moorcock, we've had Neil Gaiman, we've had Jeff Vandermeer, we've had Peter F. Hamilton, we've had Paolo, I can't pronounce his name, he wrote The Wind-Up Girl. We've had hundreds of authors on there, and the fact that they allowed us to have this stuff again is it's a lot of satisfaction from having that. But it is, like, it's not something new. It's been running for years, and hopefully it'll continue to run for years. And with me at the helm, it hopefully won't run and crash to the crash and burn. But yeah, it's been going on for quite a long time. And in that time period, I hope to really get some really big names on there. But I also hope to get some new people on there as well. I mean, I've had some people who we've published on the show come up to me and said, "I thank you so much for putting me on the same podcast as someone like Alistair Reynolds, who's my favorite all-time author, and the fact that I can have been on the same show as him, it means the world to me." And that just makes everything worth it. It's really fantastic to hear people say that, and I definitely want to keep doing that for as long as I can.
No, definitely. Now, being a writer yourself, as well as being working on Starship Sofa, do you find that your dual perspective influences the way you work? Does being a writer impact your role as an editor, or does being an editor impact your role as a writer?
Definitely. I'd say being an editor impacts my role as a writer a lot more, because whenever I'm reading something, I try to think about all the possible plot holes or any way that you could any angle you could see the story from that would cause doubt, like saying, well, why couldn't he have done this? Well, why couldn't he have asked that? Why couldn't she have looked this way? And when I'm reading stories, those stare at me in the face, and I try not to make the same mistake when I'm writing my own fiction. But of course, I also try to keep the story as it is and not change it too much based on what other people have written, because it's very easy to become inspired or just follow a certain footpath of making a story, follow a certain degree of writing. And so I definitely try to, while I definitely try to adapt from the mistakes that I see, I also try to also try to have a unique path, because there's nothing more important than artistic integrity and autonomy in art. And so it's definitely something I'd like more people to see, that they just press on and get the work out there, not to worry too much about if someone will think this was wrong or someone will say this might not make sense. Get it out there and see if someone likes it. Like, I've seen stories that not many other two people have liked, and I've thought they were marvelous, and I wanted to have them on the show. So it all depends on the editor, but at the same time, there does come down to stuff when something is objectively bad. If sentence doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense. It's not about one's perspective. Some stuff does need to change, and I've been able to work with some authors in getting that stuff done, so that's really a pleasure to be doing.
Well, I mean, I can only speak from a personal point of view. I don't know whether it's the same for other writers, but I know for me, there's a big temptation that when you read a great story by Ken Liu or whatever, you want to go out and write the same sort of story. When you read a great story by Stephen King, you want to go write another Stephen King story.
Oh, yeah.
Instead, you should be writing the next big story by you.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, because, yeah, there's, you get, thing is though, you get, let's just say, like, here's a setting, let's just say a starship cruising through space with only one occupant and 20 dead. Now, that's your starting point of the novel. And by the time the novel finishes, you and I will both have completely different endings. Our ways of getting there would be the same. A million different things could have happened, and the writing style will certainly be different. So, obviously, no one will obviously be able to write the exact same story. Everyone has their own unique spin on it, but at the same time, you've got to have... Don't write what's new. Don't write what seems to be working. Write what you want to write and see where it goes from there. And, yeah, you're right. If you do watch a film or play a game or read a book, you just you see the same sort of style and you want to follow that. You want to achieve the same certain greatness. And you have to fight the impulse to do that, because you've got to make your story you. And so if you just have, like, let's just say you've read a fantastic sentence in some book by, I don't know, Brandon Sanderson, and then you go to your own, you say, oh, that's a fantastic word, that's a fantastic sentence, why don't I put that in my own work? So you go to edit your story, and the prose doesn't compute. The sentence doesn't fit with the rest of the paragraph. That piece of dialogue is not what this character would say. It just doesn't compute. And sometimes you've got to cut it, because even if it's the best sentence the book will have, you've got to cut it because it just doesn't work with the rest of the stuff. And so originality is important. A voice is important. But at the same time, one thing I hate even more is when people, they're a one-trick pony. When they've only got one voice, one style, one form of writing, and they just simply focus on that. They can't, none of the stories are anything different. And you get someone like Joe Abercrombie, who's every single character, like, it's not even written in the same style. One of his characters will have interior monologue. One of his characters will sometimes think in present tense. He sees a story through different lenses for each character, and that's something I'd like to see more people doing, being able to read fresh stuff. Because at the same time, you mentioned Stephen King. How many people, like, everyone knows that Stephen King did something like The Shining, that he did something like It. But how many people actually guessed, without knowing first, that he would do something like Shawshank Redemption? It's completely the opposite. And even now I'm surprised that he did something, because it's everything that he does, like horror, sort of really dark, gritty stuff with a really macabre ending. Shawshank Redemption goes against everything that does, and being able to have that variety of voice and being able to articulate that many different styles and tackle so many levels, it's definitely a great skill to have.
I've always been fascinated by the fact that Stephen King's most successful movie adaptations have all been of his non-horror work. I mean, you look at Shawshank Redemption, The Stand, which was obviously based on the novella, The Body, even The Green Mile doesn't really fit the normal mold of what he writes.
Yeah, it's not really supernatural horror. It's more magic realism. But you like The Shining, though. That's pretty. I'd say the film is people have actually questioned if that's actually supernatural at all. But the book definitely, without a doubt, is. So yeah, it is interesting that he's been able to do that. But again, just like with audio, every single director has a different take on it. I think Frank Darabont. He did The Green Mile and Shawshank and The Mist. It's completely different style as it was to Stanley Kubrick when he was tackling The Shining. So again, like with audio and like with fiction, each narrator or director will bring their own dash of personality to the work, no matter how close it is.
Now, as much as I could talk about Stephen King for another hour or so, let's keep on you. How would you describe your own writing? What genres do you enjoy working in?
So genres, science fiction, fantasy, obviously, but I don't do urban fantasy or magic realism. I find it's a little too basic. It's just not as much possibility. I'm more of the high-low fantasy sort of department, if that makes sense. You get people like J. Abercrombie, Mark Lawrence, I'm not really sure who else at the moment, Brent Weeks, Peter V. Brett, Robin Hobb, etc., that put the work in a really fantastical universe, fantastical kingdom, but it's very gritty, very visceral, it's very down-to-earth, it's very gutsy, that sort of thing. That's the sort of top department that I work in. The voice is really, rough, gritty, it's very realistic, very brutal, that sort of work that I do in the fantasy. But when it comes to science fiction, I'm very, I wouldn't say it's space opera, call it more post-cyberpunk, if that makes sense. It's definitely an aggressive tone, but it's also it's a bit more grander than Blade Runner, shall we say, or something like Total Recall. It's a little bit more open, it's a little more grander, it's a little more expansive, but it also maintains that really, not dystopian, but that really down-to-earth, gritty atmosphere that you'd get in a typical cyberpunk novel. And so, yeah, I'd say that's definitely the sort of work departments that I work in. I don't really do, as I said, really basic science fiction where this is some little piece of technology that impacts the world around you. That's not really my thing. And magical realism where something just randomly occurs that's at odds with the physical realm, that's not really stuff that I do either. But I think that the department that a lot of people don't do, and I'd like to see more people do, is surreal metaphysical sort of fiction. Stephen King's very big with that, like the American rural town where this weird stuff happens and that it just transcends into other realms. And that's a department that I've been showing interest in, and it's something I'd like to see more people do. But we are a science fiction podcast, and I'd like to see more. We need to have science fiction, so as long as we have that basis to work with, the sky's the limit, or the galaxy, rather, in this case.
So are you working on anything at the moment that you'd like to talk about?
Yes, I am, actually. I'm working on a novel. Actually, I've just finished it. I'm doing my third draft at the moment. I've had interest from one of the big five publishers in Australia, and I spoke to the head editor at a convention, and she showed interest to me, and she gave me a business card. So I'm definitely working on that. Sending out queries to agents and sending it out to beta readers, seeing what I can do, seeing who bites, shows interest, and I'll see what goes from there. Like, I spent, I think, a year writing this novel. It's science fiction. It's science fiction. It's a young adult, but it's also a young adult in the sense that Joe Abercrombie's Half a King is young adult, or in the sense that Garth Nix is young adult. Because you say young adult, people automatically assume sparkly vampires and just like shells with Twilight, and that's something, that's a negative mentality that I'd like to go away, because we've had quite a few young adult stories upcoming on the Starship Sofa, and some of this stuff is some of the best fiction I've ever read, and I'd like to see more people be able to tackle this, being able to write that for an audience that appeals both for grizzled adults, but also appeals to teenagers and young adults. So yeah, that's what I'm working on at the moment. I'm also working on a bunch of short stories. I think I've written about five. I'm just sending them out to a magazine, seeing what I can come up with. I'm starting a new short story soon. It's just so much work to do, and I've been asked to do a few more editorials for some magazines talking about podcasting and the like. So yeah, it's just really busy, always doing stuff.
Yeah, that certainly sounds pretty busy to me. Mm. And you're also studying writing at the moment, is that correct?
So yeah, I'm also a university student, and at the outset I said I'm 19, and I am a student, and it's very, very difficult to balance it, because at one point you go to university lecture, and they're talking about political poetry, and omnipresent perspectives, and the teacher's just trying to break into us that literary fiction is for smart people and fantasy is not. And it's very hard to come away from that and just start writing a story about dragons and wizards and magic, and it's a big contrast, but it definitely does help me. And there are some PE teachers who do appeal to fantasy. I mean, again, the whole concept that literary fiction is superior to fantasy and science fiction, it's slowly wearing away. We've got people like Cormac McCarthy and Katsuo Izaguro. I can't pronounce his name properly without butchering, but he did write Never Let Me Go, which was turned into a film, and stuff like that, stuff that blends both science fiction, not genre fiction, and literary together. I'd say that's it's definitely wearing away some of the bias and hate towards genre fiction. And the whole even state called genre fiction, literary fiction, it's misnomer, because literary fiction is a genre, and that's something I'm going to fight to the death to. And with you do have things such as gothic fiction and post-apocalyptic fiction, and it's starting to gain more respect in the academic world. I'm not sure if this is a good or bad thing for the set, because science fiction will never truly be accepted by the mainstream. There's always going to be some old grandmother or someone turns up the nose while you're writing that stuff. But at the same time, though, you've got to, as I said, you've got to write what you write. You've got to write the sort of stuff that inspires you, that draws you, that interests you, because writing is not a department for people who value security. It's not something for people who have thin skin. So it's you've got to write what you want to write, and there will always be someone who's going to put you down for what you do. So you've got to just turn your nose up and just write what you want to write.
So with all the stuff that you're doing, the editing, the writing, and the studying, do you actually find time to read outside the stories you're reading for Starship Sofa? Is there anything you're reading at the moment?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm reading Karen Miller's The Falcon Throne at the moment. It's fantastic. I actually have a review of that coming up in Grimdark magazine. I'm reading Peter F. Hamilton, The Great North Road. I'm also doing Emperor of Thorns by Mark Lawrence, and I think I've got the last Mistborn novel somewhere waiting down the line. Yeah, it's just, and I think I've got to get started on Terry Brooks, apparently getting adapted for TV, and I think I've got Terry Pratchett somewhere as well. Also, this is not enough time, but I definitely am reading, and it's definitely something that helps me, because sometimes when I just feel a bit down, I'm just like, no, I've had enough. I'm never going to get anywhere with this. You just sit down with a novel, and you think, if this person did it, if they were able to write a full novel like this, so can I. And it is really inspiring. We all, as authors, we all build off each other, up off each other. Because for a long time, I doubted that I'd sell anything for a long time. And here I am. I sold my first short story at 18. So it's definitely gratifying. And part of the thing that kept me going was reading. And I would go to bookstores and say, these people did it, so can I. And I just go home and I just pound away at a computer. And that's definitely helped me out a lot. And so honestly, I don't see how one could write without reading. It's just the two go together.
No, I certainly agree. Well, thank you. It's been wonderful having you on Galactic Chat. Thank you for your time.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, no worries. Anytime.
And I'll look forward to catching up with Starship Sofa and listening to some of those stories, because it sounds like you're doing some wonderful work there.
Yeah, thank you very much.